We're building a new world, and we're building it with love. As I travel around, I see that there are so many people who are awakening not just to some kind of personal experience, like personal improvement, but to their contribution in the world. And devastating as so many of the signs in the world are, they're feeling hopeful. For me in New Zealand, I'm captivated by the potential of this tiny country with 3 million plus people, wondering what percentage of people would it take in New Zealand to really shift consciousness. I think the opportunity here is much better than it is in most other countries.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Green Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Green Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth. Time for a cool change? When you wake up in the morning, do you bound out of bed, thrilled to be alive? That's right, springing into action, ready for a totally new day, being full of zeal, possibility, and opportunity? For I dearly like to think that you still have this youthful, childlike puppy dog zest for existence to burst into wakefulness, as living in the moment definitely feeds and nourishes our soul. Yet, here we are today, and we as a collective humanity are finding that we are immersed and awash in challenging times. Intuitively, we know that humanity's drive to fulfill all our physical and material needs is a continuous task of survival, a lot of it coupled to stress. And we, in most cases, have to do it on our own and often in an isolated family situation. Yet we instinctively know that there has to be a better way and that we have to change, we need to change. But how do we find this better way? And what is the trigger that helps us and assists us to change? This is the question. The old saying, it's getting faster and faster, better and better and worse, still carries with it the urgency that we 7.6 billion breath-sharing human beings have to realize our connectivity to that of a greater whole. That somewhere our umbilical cords all connect to a distant past that spirals back through time to a common source, and that today, now, we can either come together as a conscious, loving global family and commit to start mindfully co-creating, cooperating, and collaborating to shape our common future, or allow circumstances to drag us down to that of a stark reality that doesn't bear well for us and all children. Thus, we are now entering a now or never moment, a time to say life has to be far better and joyful than this. We cannot have, in most cases, unelected entities and players pulling the strings behind the economic and political facade that is so out of touch with a localized community, people as a whole, and all life within the biosphere. Something, somehow, now has to happen. And it has to start with us, and it needs to start with us. It needs to start with you, and it has to start with me. Making excuses will only put off the inevitable. So, for me, as a radio host, it's now or never. Will that be for you? Remember, the greatest journey is from our head to our heart. In the studio this morning, I have Will Wilkinson. He is from Ashland in Oregon, USA, and he has put a stake in the ground for today and tomorrow's children, and the human race, and all biota within the biosphere, by writing a book called Now or Never. And as we all know, we need to be able to take care of our future. And Will has come out with a statement saying, something wonderful is happening. And this wonderful thing that is happening is that people globally are waking up. They are wanting to commit to their children and grandchildren and to a positive, optimistic, peaceful tomorrow. So, kia ora, Will. Thank you for coming in. I did a previous interview of you about 4 weeks ago. I'm wanting now to follow up because you have inspired me and many others. So, kia ora. Thank you.
Kia ora, Tim. It's tremendous to be here in New Zealand, to be with you in person. We did our show before when I was back in Ashland, and I've since had about 3 weeks here in your beautiful country, and it's great to be in the studio with you this morning.
I'm very happy that you are here too. Well, because you've got a wealth of knowledge, experience, but you also have a certain intuitive knowing that the strings of community, locally and globally, have to come together. And so what is your present thinking now, or how you see things in relationship to your book, Now or Never?
We're building a new world, and we're building it with love. As I travel around, I see that there are so many people who are awakening, not just to some kind of personal experience, like personal improvement, but to their contribution in the world. And devastating as so many of the signs in the world are, they're feeling hopeful. For me in New Zealand, I'm captivated by the potential of this tiny country with 3 million plus people, wondering what percentage of people would it take in New Zealand to really shift consciousness. I think the opportunity here is much better than it is in most other countries.
I do agree. It's easier to change the minds of a small room of people than, say, a whole stadium full of people, because you have less people to have to convince.
Well, it's true. And then there's this phenomenon of herd mentality. When you reach a tipping point, some people have become familiar with the 100th monkey effect, where consciousness shifts at a certain point when a certain percentage of people have made a shift, then it seems to transmit through a far broader range of people.
It's very true, and we'll aim for this today in the interview, is to be able to let people feel what you are saying so that they can, tonight when they go to bed, dwell on this.
Well, Tim, I just want to return to your introduction, which I thought was quite profound, because you put your finger on the distinction of what's going on in the 21st century versus what's gone on historically. Historically, people start movement, and they're rallied around something that people agree is important. This is a very different kind of movement. Now or Never is much more personal. It relates to what is my task in the world, not jumping on someone else's bandwagon, but what is mine to do? What was I born to do in the world? And as I say in the book, I feel it's now or never to personally commit to whatever that is. Then the movement is a movement that includes people who are all giving their unique gifts rather than rallying around one cause.
Very true. Now, the New Zealand has built a lot of its global awareness around team spirit. We've had the All Blacks, and the All Blacks have been consistently, as a rugby team, a very, very successful group playing together.
Yes.
And then Team New Zealand, the yachting team that won the America's Cup a number of times, they said Team New Zealand. So there is a undercurrent of wanting to work together for the betterment of the whole.
It's a very important principle relative to what we're talking about. I know in athletics they say that the measure of a really great player relates to what they're doing when they don't have the ball, when they're not the focus of attention. Because the team's success depends on everyone being aware of each other and not just trying to do it on their own. So that's why I'm hopeful for New Zealand. You've got that team spirit. It's actually right in the culture. The Kiwi way is to be generous together.
We trust in this process, most definitely. Now, Will, you've just had a quick tour of the northern half of the North Island, and you would have been able to get a better feel for New Zealand, and you see that, you know, we're so fortunate. You're driving along good roads, you're looking at farmland, and it's green. Admittedly, we've just had a lot of rain recently. And you've gone through, you've driven through little towns, and the towns appear to be doing quite well. Yes, sure, there are other people who are in their homes in the outskirts of town or areas of town where you don't see. But essentially, at the moment, we are a relatively prosperous country. And what do you see that can help us take this prosperity to internalize this, to get our riches from within, to come out and spill out and work together as a more dynamic or synergistic community?
Well, we did tour north of Auckland and a little south, and I've been here three other times, and people haven't changed. People here are very friendly, very warm, and it is a beautiful country. My wife would move here tomorrow if she could, I think. What I also notice is the apathy that shows up when people are so occupied just making a living. And my experience with people is almost everybody has a good heart. They're concerned about the world. They want their children to be well. But so many of us are distracted by what we need to do to make a living, and then all the social media that's assaulting us, all the problems that are landing on us, that it's difficult for the average person to stop all that, to disrupt the machine that's rolling like a train rumbling down the track, to interrupt the kind of kinesthetic direction of their life and go, wait a minute, what's really important? Because it's kind of like holding a penny up to the sun. We've got 1,000 pennies blocking the sun. All these little distractions that really blind us to what's most important, which is that we're in an emergency situation. The situation on planet Earth is urgent. And taking a stand means acknowledging that and asking, what am I called to do about it? So as I tour the country, on the one hand, I'm thrilled with the people, love the country, the weather. Who wouldn't love New Zealand? And I'm also concerned about the apathy. And this is not to judge anyone. It's built into the system. We're apathetic because it's all so overwhelming, right? And
agreed.
Our leaders are not speaking up and telling us what they really should be telling us.
I agree. I mean, my word is in many ways is complacency.
Yes.
It's because we are a safe country. And this has been, particularly over the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years, a safety net for New Zealanders. So it's been in many ways quite easy. It's getting tougher now. Mm-hmm. And so, again, a lot of people have to focus on a job. So if they're focusing on getting to work and taking care of their kids, and all families are wanting to have their children do sport, do music, do ballet, everything outside schooling hours. And so that takes up a lot of their time as well, that we haven't got time to, I'd say, put our head above the parapet to see what's going on.
Yeah.
But also, it's to go to workshops. I mean, this is one of the good things that happens in New Zealand. There are workshops happening up and down the country, particularly in the major cities, where people come from, particularly from overseas, who have got an understanding of how to, from yoga to Tai Chi to being able to activate something within them, just like you're doing now. And so I'd like you to speak to that.
Well, you use the key word, which is activate. And you know firsthand, because you were in the workshop we did a couple of weeks ago, that my intention is to help activate the genius that everybody shows up with. This is opposite to the attitude in school, for instance, where students are considered empty and need to be filled up with the knowledge the teacher has that they don't have. Well, this is endemic. It's a problem through all our systems, a dishonoring of the genius that lies in each one of us as potential. I'm very concerned about young people, because young people are the leaders of tomorrow. And real education is helping anyone, but particularly young people, connect with the organizing intelligence of the universe. I use the word love. Others may use the word God. It doesn't care what we call it. But the real education we need in the urgency of our times is to become deeply connected with nature, with the power of spirit, so that it guides us as a compass, not a moral compass, which is based in beliefs, but a compass that's connected to the wisdom of life itself, so that we're flowing with the same power that's beating my heart, steering the stars, taking care of everything. Now, as a parent, that's the number one thing a parent really wants their child to have is that compass so they know how to behave, because they're not going to be hovering over them all the time. And they want to feel when my child leaves the nest, they're well prepared to live a good life on their own.
It's interesting, I was at the holiday park where I work this weekend, and there was about four families, and they were an antenatal group, and they decided to have their holidays outside school holiday hours at this camp, and so all the kids in the families, or all the mums and dads and the children, come there, they put up a tent, they all live together, they eat together, the kids are running around, they're barefoot, climbing trees, they're down on the beach, they're swimming, they're kayaking, they're doing everything together. And I was talking to these mothers and fathers, and they said, oh, look, the schools don't appear to be too concerned about we taking our children away, because our children are really experiencing things that you just can't experience in the city.
Right.
But not only that, they're interesting. One of them was reading a book, and he was only about 9 years of age. I said, you're reading a book? Fantastic. And then his father was just behind him. He said, yes, he's always reading a book. And then we talked to him about Star Wars and asked the children about the Force. And I'm getting one in, say, five children say, yes, there is a Force. And I'm wanting to take this a little bit further, is that we're not speaking much about life after death anymore. From a standpoint, spirituality was part of my life when I was a kid. We used to ask, who was a Presbyterian, who was a Methodist, who was a Catholic, who was an Anglican? And we had this continuing story about Christianity. Well, that's fallen away hugely, but in the process, soul has been eliminated from the vernacular. And I think we all must realize that soul is related to spirituality, and we are spiritual beings having an earth experience.
Well, absolutely, Tim, and you've brought up quite a few points there in what you just said, and introducing the concept of the Force and Star Wars. Popular as those films were, and I think they contributed something valuable in terms of the hero's journey, I've often pondered, what would it have been like if the franchise had been called Star Peace instead of Star Wars? And the Force, you, I think, are familiar with the book Power Versus Force by David Hawkins.
Yes.
Very interesting, because I think force is the external evidence of power, which is an internal reality. And if we're only using force, it's all about might and control and power over others. The real power, for instance, in nature is different than that. It's a cooperative, collaborative. You could say it's the ultimate team spirit, because
Completely.
You've got billions of species all operating on the same power source.
Completely.
And they're synergistic. They're all helping each other. So that's what we want our young people to connect with, which is the power behind the force, so that their force is guided by the power, the same power that's guiding everyone and everything else.
Agreed, particularly when you have a look at how bacteria work, and also the fungi and the mycelium networks, that when we look beneath, as you say, at the lower level, and see under the ground how all these networks interconnect, and they actually break down food for the plant roots, for want of a better, quick way of saying it. But there is a coordinated effect of everything working together. It's like ant colonies and bee colonies. There is purpose.
Yes.
And yet we human beings have seemed to have jumped the rails and not recognized that there are all these different kingdoms within nature that are working always, constantly, for the betterment of the whole.
Absolutely. And I think a route to reconnect with that is to interrupt the busyness of our lives, whether it means getting out of the office and going for a walk, sitting and meditating, having a deep conversation with someone or oneself. I often think there's two aspects to our daily life. There's flow and there's focus. A good example of how both are needed is you're having a dinner party and people are talking and it's very social, and then someone dings a bell and, you know, you have a 30-second grace. Someone says something, everybody gets quiet, and there's a feeling of reverence and a penetration There's depth. And then you carry on talking and flow. If all you ever did was just flow, if all the kids ever did was just play in the park, nothing would ever come to focus. They would enjoy themselves and there'd be kind of an osmosis. But think of it when a teacher, a real teacher, says, look at these plants. Feel your connection to them. Hold this grasshopper in your hand or whatever, a cicada. Sense your kinship with that very different species. How does that feel? Now, just that interrupts the kind of unconscious experience that we're all in, distracted by, really, and brings a focus and allows something to shift.
Yeah, very good. I was an Australian. I had a Japanese group that came down, and some students came down. And so I went and got some cow manure and some soil, and I put it in a box. I made up a box, and I distributed some radish seeds to each one of those. And I only was going to have these students for a very short time. And so I got them to plant these radish seeds in the soil, and we had a little ceremony. And then we watched over the days these radishes grow. And then on about, I don't know, the 21st or 26th day, we had a little ceremony, and we picked the radishes out and gave them to each one, and we had a radish-eating moment.
That's great.
But they saw something start from nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
And they couldn't believe it, that cow manure would offer them something.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, we've got to have the humour of it as well.
Sure. But what a great education for them to see life working.
Yeah, yes, yes. Yeah. And you can do all sorts of little things. I used to get carrot tops, and I used to bring carrot tops in and put them in a little saucer full of water. And after a couple of days, the carrot top would show a little bit of green, a little bit of green, a little bit of green. And we watched this, and it came right up to full moon, and then I carried on putting the carrot tops after full moon, and they didn't grow.
Mm.
And they had to wait another two weeks because the energy was descending.
Yeah.
And it really made me realize how powerful the moon is in the whole game plan.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're reminding me of an experience my wife and I had just a few days ago. We were up at the Tahara Retreat Center in Taupo. And right behind our cottage was the garden. And my wife is a big plant lady, so she was out talking to the gardener. And this was a woman who's gardened for 20 years. And she said, you know, I've learned over the years with gardening, not everything works out. Some plants grow, some plants don't. And you can't really tell what's going to happen. Sometimes the tomatoes go off. Sometimes it's zucchinis, cucumbers, beans, whatever. So she's very philosophical about it, but she doesn't stop gardening. And I was thinking, that's what our lives are like. Some things work out, other things don't do so well. We tend to blame ourselves or try and fix things. Well, the main thing is to keep on gardening. And what do we do when we're gardening? We make sure there's enough light, there's enough water, there's enough nutrients. And I think that's the attitude to have about everything in our life, to feed it and nurture it and to be not attached to the results, because it's not up to us what grows and what doesn't grow.
Yes, I go out barefoot. And so I'm barefooted in the garden, and I know that I'm earthing myself.
Right.
And if the sun is shining and there's lots of bird life, well, it's just time out. And it's a magnificent time to just be. And I think this is where we, again, fall back into ourselves and realize.
Well, Tim, you and I were talking earlier about the show, and I mentioned a quote from my book, and I want to read it. It's very short because it relates to everything we're talking about. This is from Henry David Thoreau. I am made to love the pond and meadow as the wind is made to ripple the water. Now, that's a very simple one-sentence quote. I'll read it again. I am made to love the pond and meadow as the wind is made to ripple the water. Now, I'm a writer, and I believe words are magic. There's a spell in these words. I am made to love the pond and meadow. In other words, as a human, I am designed to give something of value into nature. Now, that itself is a radical idea, because usually we're in awe of nature. We go into a forest and we're receiving. What am I giving? I am made to love the pond and meadow. To me, that suggests a higher function in humans, that we are here to bring a divine presence, a current of love, as he describes it, into the world. Now, how many of us have accepted that responsibility consciously? That's what Now or Never is about, really. I'm sitting here in this studio with you. I'm here consciously to contribute whatever I can that might bless your listeners, that might enrich their lives, might help you. That's my attitude. And I feel that's the natural attitude that we're born with, that we get educated out of. Creators, natural creators, are turned into consumers. What can we get instead of what are we here to naturally give?
It brings it back to co-creating. We are here yes. as co-creators and working together. And I've been on enough working situations with people that we might have a small project to do, and if we complete it in one day and we all stand back and we've made a little shed or something like that, and at the end of the day we all stand back and think, wow, look what we've done. Right. Everyone feels good, their chest, you know, and standing up. Now, if we can get our people, there's so many people unemployed at the moment, and this is, I know that just a day working with the unemployed and you achieve something, they're 10 feet tall when they walk out of there, because for the first time, maybe in years, they're validated and experienced some success.
Well, you're talking about something extremely important. And in my experience, the change that we're looking for is turning duty into enjoyment. If we're doing something out of a sense of duty, I should do it, the motivation doesn't really last that long. When the boss isn't looking, we'll stop working. Tools down,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But if what we're doing is a joy to do, if we really enjoy it, we don't need anybody to motivate us. We don't care if there's a boss cracking the whip. We'll keep on doing it. So it's natural to enjoy being alive. Why can't we educate ourselves and our young people to include what they need to do to make a living as something enjoyable that they want to do? Rather than, well, you should do this, you should learn this trade to make a living. No, what do you want to do? What do you feel passionate about? Do that. Let me help you do that. Contribute to society. Love being alive.
Well, when we're putting out and we're doing good, the doing good seems to also allow us to meet situations that benefit us. I have a lot of synchronicity in my life. I trip over it. I mean, yesterday.
It's a great image, Tim. Tripping over synchronicity. I'm going to use that, and I'll give you credit.
Yeah, thank you. And just yesterday, last night, evening, I ran into a journalist, and I'd met him previously, and he came over, and he wanted to talk to me, and he just wanted to talk about, well, what can we do to make the world better? And he stayed for close on half an hour, and we shared. And I didn't expect that, because I was vacuuming my car to make it all tidy for you when I picked you up this morning. And he told me, he said, he's working with people and they are amazed at what he's done in his life. And I said, yes, because the story is the young ones aren't finding the mentors to assist them to flower and to get creative, to be involved, and to do just something that will fulfill them.
Well, this is such an important part of our potential success, is that those of us who are of our age, we're both longer in the tooth, stop being so preoccupied with ourselves and become available as mentors for others, which means we take an active interest in them and create a field of nurturing where their genius can flower. Now, that's a wonderful thing. And sadly, in our culture, we don't really honor elders that way. We may revere them, but how do we help older people become elders who are mentoring youngers who really need them? That's a big question.
It is, because his parting farewell was that he said, oh, look, I might take it to the editor that you do an article around mentoring. And I said, oh, keep that door open.
Yeah.
Because there are so many people just looking for something. And this is a local publication called Maharangi Matters, and it's a real community magazine, and they're popping up all over New Zealand at the moment, whereas the larger newspapers, the suburban newspapers, they're falling off because they're only based around selling advertising.
Right, of course.
And so the community is wanting more connection.
Well, more connection and more evidence of what happens when people care for each other. I had something happen the other day. It was very humbling. I was in my office in Ashland, and I was alone just doing some writing, and the door opened, and some woman came in, really in a state of consternation. And I didn't know who she was, and I went out to ask her how I could help her. She presented herself as a crazy person, and I drew back. I was quite nervous suddenly. Who was this? And she felt it immediately. And she said, oh, you don't want me in here. You want me to leave. And of course, I heard that, and that kind of brought me to my senses. And I took a step towards her and began to engage with her. Within about 30 seconds, she told me that her son had just committed suicide. And she was trying to deal with it, and no one was helping her. And she was crazy with grief. And so I reached out and I held her, and we cried together. And that was so humbling. She stayed a few more minutes, and then she left thanking me. But initially, I rejected her. I didn't have room for her because she brought a disturbed energy into my life. And I'm not proud of that. But I tell the story because it's a learning moment for me. We need people who are available to handle what others bring to them. And I learned a big lesson there. And I know that that improves my ability to help people. And I like to tell the story because it reminds me of how I can be dismissive of others who I just judge. I was judging her. And I think we need more compassionate listeners, people of whatever age who are available for the grief, the heartache, the pain, the suffering, the confusion that others are carrying that they don't have anybody to talk to about. Why is our suicide rate so high? I mean, for a person to take their life, and thousands are doing it. The rate for young people is just heartbreaking. It's because they have no one that they really feel is listening to them, that really cares about them. I want to grow into a person who has that capacity. And I really feel humble in this. I have a ways to go, but I'm conscious of it. And so I'm developing my ability to do that.
Yeah, I had a situation a wee bit like this too, up at the holiday park. There was a lady, she might have been about, I don't know, 55. She didn't look healthy. She was not pretty. And she seemed to have some scars on her arms. And she was staying in her little camper van. And she'd come backwards and forwards to the kitchen and prepare her food. And so I felt to ask her, how are you going? Mm. Are you enjoying yourself here? And so she came back. She said, oh, well, this place is lovely. Anyway, they're developed a conversation around it, and I just checked to make sure she was okay. And then I met her a couple more times over the next few days. And in the last day she was leaving, and she came up to me, and she said, can I hug you? And I said, sure.
Oh, that's great.
And I didn't look to see if anybody was watching or anything like that. I hugged her.
Yeah.
And I held her.
Yeah.
And then when she went away, and just around the corner, I heard her say, yippee!
Oh, what a great story.
Yeah,
thank you, Tim.
Yeah.
See, that's exactly what we're talking about here. It's called compassion.
Yeah.
You reached out to her.
Mm.
You really heard her.
Mm.
Imagine now the ripple effect from that, going out in her life, touching other people that know her.
Yes, yes. Yeah, well, the fact that we share breaths, you see, the whole radio program is premised in many ways is on environment, health, and consciousness. So they're all interlinked. And the fact, too, is, and I've made it clear many times, is that at a localized level, our planet lends us a body. It lends us free fresh air, free rainwater, and a free food chain until recently. What are we doing in reciprocity? And it's the fact is we are connected to this magnificent superorganism, Mother Earth, that we need to be able to be thankful and grateful for the fact that we're having this breath. Because if we didn't have this breath, in 1.5 minutes, you and I would be flat on the ground here.
Well, exactly. I mean, I'm reminded of the phrase, to whom much is given, much is expected. And we've been given a lot. Every moment we're given a lot. What do we do in return? There are people who are wondering how to save the world. Well, you know, it's a nice sentiment, but who's standing right in front of you? Are you seeing the woman who needs a hug right in front of you? I was thinking the other day about that story in the Bible where a centurion approached Jesus and said, "My servant is sick, and I'd like you to heal him. I know you could." And Jesus said something like, "I haven't seen faith like this in all of Israel." And the centurion loved his servant, and he believed that Jesus could heal the servant. So Jesus apparently said, "Okay, let's go. Let's go to heal your servant." And the centurion said, "No, we don't even need to go there. Just speak the word, and I know my servant will be healed." And he was. And the message of the story to me is totally pertinent to what we're talking about. Number one, the centurion loved his servant. He wasn't just his servant, he was his friend. That provided a medium of transmission from an elder who had power because he was connected to source to flow it through and create a healing independent of space and time. So right now you've got people listening to the show. If we're sharing this quantum moment, if we have true faith, which is not in beliefs, it's not in a religion, but it's faith in love, faith in life, and we just open and we allow that life to flow, everything and everyone we love is touched by that transmission. And that happens in the quantum moment. We don't need a stadium filled with 10,000 people. We don't need to be on television with a million. Each individual can be touched in the quantum moment by the gift of love. If there's someone to transmit it, and if there's someone who has the faith to receive it and let it move out into their world, it all happens in our consciousness.
I remember that scene well. It was Ernest Borgnine who played the centurion, and it was Robert Powell who played Christ. And in that moment, yeah. So, I mean, we are connected to the field.
Yes.
It's the field. It's intent. Intent.
Yeah, it's a wonderful word, the field. I have my field, you have yours, we share a field, we grow a field together, a family has a field. Imagine if we were all consciously nurturing our field. And like any culture, a field grows something. You know, a petri dish, a culture in a petri dish will grow bacteria or whatever. What is the culture in my field growing? I would like it to grow more love. Well, how do I do that? By expressing love. I often say to people, if they're feeling unloved, if there's a lack of love in their life, be more loving. Because the first one who experiences what I express is me.
Yes. I come from a farm, and Mutta Mutta, lovely farm, had a crystal clear stream running through it in those days. It's still fairly clear, but I wouldn't drink the water now, where once upon a time I could swim and drink. And Dad offered me the farm. And not only that, he knew every cow by name. Every cow had a name. Mm. And I wanted to go to the bright lights, big city. But that's where I actually grew in the end and woke up. And I said to Dad, "Why do you really want to give up the farm?" And he said, "Because I refuse to take one more calf away from its mother."
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yes. And if anybody has been present when a farmer takes the calf away from its mother, they're traumatized.
Yes.
They're both traumatized. The cow is mooing and trying to get through the fence to get to its calf, and the calf is bleating. And it is a horrible scene because the love of the cow for its baby, and this is part of the bigger picture that of Mother Earth, she has all the animal kingdom, all the babies come from mothers. And if you have a look at polar bears, if you have a look at horses, you have a look at dogs or cats, you will find that the mother has a very, very powerful connection with its babies. And we need to be able to instill the parents to have this connection with their children, so much so that they'll say, "It's now or never."
Well, you're reminding me of what Chief Seattle said when he finally signed the treaty with the white man. He said that the white man should take care of the animals. And we've done a terrible job of that. In fact, early experiments on animals were done on the basis of believing that animals were incapable of feeling pain.
That's right. Oh, yes.
Which is crazy. I mean, they'd make a cut and the animal would cry.
Yes.
What was that?
Mm-hmm.
So that, in a sense, is hopeful, a hopeful sign we've evolved. We are becoming more aware. The exceptionalism that separated humans from animals and plants and all the other species, for some of us, is beginning to fall away. We're realizing that we're one of a billion species on the planet, and we need to cooperatively live together on this sphere, the pale blue dot, as we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, Carl Sagan said it very clearly, that within the biosphere, we are one, and that there is this thing called unity consciousness, and I adhere to it very closely, and to bring this ideal through is the challenge of the day.
Well, and let's give some hope to our listeners and remind ourselves that less is more. I mean, we live in a culture where more is more. More money, more love, more sex, more food, more everything. But the science around, for instance, endocrine disruptors in the health field has proven that as you diminish the dose of a toxin, you get to a point where a toxin is able to slip into the body under the defenses of the immune system. So in the past, toxic reactions were measured from a certain starting point upwards, so the more toxin, the more poisonous effect. Then someone had the brilliant idea to ask, well, what happens if we measure lower? In other words, under that starting point, if it was, say, 5 milligrams, 4 milligrams, 3 milligrams, 2 milligrams, etc. Much to their surprise, they found that the impact on a body from a toxic exposure increases as the dose goes down at a certain point because the immune system doesn't recognize the threat.
Yes.
So we're all flying under the radar. I'm one person. I'm small. I'm not an army of 10 million. What does that mean? It means that I can stay under the radar. I can get into the system. I am in the system. We're all in the system. And if anyone has ever dropped a drop of ink into a glass of water, they've seen how that ink spreads out and covers the whole glass. And before you know it, the whole glass, all the water, has changed color. So we should feel encouraged with our size, not discouraged. We don't need a billion people all agreeing with us. Each individual is under the radar, expressing the qualities that are moving into the system. And I use the term love, that love is the quality we want to be expressing, that infiltrates under the defense system of the deep state, is the word
yes.
some people use.
Mm-hmm.
How do we affect the deep state? We stay under the radar and go underneath and get right into the system, expressing the qualities that will change it.
Yes, very true. We need to be wise in the way we go about instead of reacting. We do have to react in certain situations, but we have to make sure that we have got a solution that is people-friendly and planet-friendly. And there's just heaps of work to do.
Well, and to be smart about it, as you're saying, be wise. We lost some money years ago investing it with a company where we discovered that the head of the company was railing against the government all the time. And he was painting a target on his chest. And finally, the government showed up in his compound in Costa Rica, confiscated all his funds, and we lost our money. Well, he didn't need to be so vocal about his criticism of the government. See what I'm saying? He wasn't flying under the radar. So we can be aware of what's wrong in the world. My wife and I live in America, and there's plenty to complain about there. But what actually makes a difference is to introduce what's missing. So if we see the evidence of hate and judgment and ignorance, we can acknowledge it, but then what do we put our passion into? Is it hating on someone else? It reminds me of that phrase, and I may have mentioned it to you before, Tim, because it's one of my favorite evidences of hypocrisy. Tom Lehrer, the folk singer back from the 60s and 70s, he introduced the song National Brotherhood Week this way. There are some people who do not love their fellow man, and I hate people like that. Now, I think that really says it, because we get very hypocritical.
Yes.
You know, in our country, people are just rabid about how terrible Trump is.
Mm.
Well, you can see that the man has some severe limitations, but am I going to express the same way that he does in reaction to him? If so, we're all doomed.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like saying, he's putting holes in the boat and we're sinking. And I go, well, I'll put holes in it too, and then we'll sink faster.
And I'll scream it out.
Yeah.
And I think this is, we're going into polarity all the time. And I think as we get more adept at conflict resolution and resolving different varying points of views, we'll be able to get people to the same table. Gorbachev, Mikhail Gorbachev and Ronald Reagan were able to sit down and finally sort things out between the Soviet Union and America. And they both committed to it, which, again, you have to honour what they realised was going to be a horrible future if we didn't.
Well, and I think the key there was they started from the end point and worked backwards. And you know that my work is like that. We begin with the vision of what we want. We agree on that. And the definitive book on this is called Getting to Yes by Bill Ury and Roger Fisher. And they used that in the SALT negotiations in the former Soviet Union successfully. You start with the end in mind, and then you negotiate, you work your way towards it. But if you don't have that initial starting point, you just fight. So that's what's missing, say, in politics, in economics, everywhere where we have these massive problems. Don't start with the problem. Start with the end goal that we can all agree on. We want our children to feel safe. We want our women to be equal to men in every regard. We want a healthy environment. We want respect for nature. On and on it goes. We can agree on all these things. It's not rocket science. Where we differ is in our approach as to how to achieve them. Okay. Let's agree on where we're going and then discuss how we're going to get there.
Interesting. I got an email just yesterday, last night, from two men from the States who came down and they spent some time with me. And I said, Tim, with your radio program, what sort of positive affirmation can we offer up? And we came to the conclusion, we all want fresh, vital water. We all want pure, clear air. We want a food chain that is organic and nutrient-dense and healthy for us. And so we can all agree on that. And so this is how we build it out. And again, as I said, this is about synchronicity. I didn't realise it. This is another one tripping over me because these two men have just landed in Auckland and I haven't seen them for 10 years.
Well, and this harkens back to where you began quite a while ago in our conversation, teamwork. And how New Zealand is known for team spirit. When we start with the goal in mind that we can agree on, we're on the same team.
Yes.
So often people fight because they think they're on different teams and they're trying to win. We're on the same team. It's the human team. It's one team. So if we can start with the goal that we share, then we can honestly discuss our often very different viewpoints on how to get there. All it is differences in navigation. We could go left down here. We could go right over here. Now we know where we're going.
Good. Now, can you build out from this, particularly in relationship to your workshop and the Now or Never book?
Well, Tim, I think the number one thing is to actually do something different. You know, Einstein said the definition of insanity was to keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result. So listeners, if they agree with what we're saying, to get a different result in their life, they'll need to do something different. Now, I don't know what it should be. I can only take care of myself, offer suggestions that might be helpful for other people. My book, Now or Never, it's available on Amazon. It's filled with suggestions, ideas, visions. One of them I'd like to share right now, if I can, which is the easiest available for listeners, is I set my smartphone for noon every day. And when my little alarm goes off, I stop what I'm doing no matter where I am, and I have a little mantra that I recite. And I suggest that everybody do this. Why? Because it interrupts the flow we were speaking about earlier to introduce some focus, to bring life to focus for just a few seconds. What I say is, this is the moment, and I'm building the future with love. And then I pause a moment, I just enjoy nature, whoever I'm with, and I go back to what I'm doing. Now that takes me 30 seconds, if that. It changes my day. So I suggested listeners who may find that appealing, set your alarm and then say whatever you want to say. I just, you know, gave the example of what I like to say, but that introduces a new discipline into life. a reminder. It's like a mini meditation that I am responsible for the future, for what I'm doing, what I'm expressing to help create the future. That's one tangible thing anybody can do.
Yes, I'd call it a memory dynamic.
Yeah.
It is to halt you in your tracks for a moment and take in a breath.
Yeah. Yep.
Yes, and this breath can be really big.
Yeah, and then something else, which you also mentioned earlier, the first words in my book are something wonderful is happening. And I think we are so locked into an old paradigm of starting with problems that need solutions, and then we get bogged down and discouraged. Instead, I recommend starting with the vision that something wonderful is happening. My heart is still beating. I'm really grateful for that. I'd like to stick around for a while.
Yes.
The sun's coming out. The clouds come over. The rain falls. The children laugh. Someone's being born. Mm. There's a lot of wonderful things that are happening. So when I remind myself of that at the very beginning, it creates a framework that allows me to handle the worst things imaginable because I'm framing them in a positive way.
When you rang me last night, I think that was my response to you.
Yeah, it was.
Yes. Well, a telephone call. When you call somebody, you can say, "Hi, Joe or Betty or Norma, how are you? I want to tell you something wonderful is happening, and that is you're home and I can speak to you on the phone."
Well, I'm just going to share this with you because it's so relevant.
Yeah.
I was sitting in a booth like this 35 years ago, being interviewed on a radio program up in Canada by a woman I had never met. And at one point during the interview, I showed her a card that I had made up. It's my business card, and on the flip side of it said, "Be thankful." Now, I learned that when she saw that, inside she grimaced, and she thought, boy, is that ever corny. And she really reacted to it. But this woman ended up coming to see me as a client, and I learned that she had some severe personal problems, which I was able to help her with. Long story short, she later became my wife. And we shared a wonderful 3-4 years together and then went different directions because we were meant to.
Yeah.
But she was touched by exactly what we're talking about. Connect with life with gratitude. Her initial response was to push away because she wasn't ready for that. But she told me she couldn't forget it. It kept working in her like a little seed and finally grew. She made 3 appointments with me before she actually came. She'd make them and cancel them. And finally she came, and she broke down completely because her life was in real trouble. So I was able to help her just by presenting that one thing: be thankful.
Oh, this is story time.
Yeah.
At the holiday park, again, where I work, I have many, many wonderful experiences because it's a community there in many ways. And I like to be able to see people interrelating. And there's a number of older folks there, and they will walk through the park from time to time, and I'll go up to them and see them, and I know them quite well now. And the other day, everyone had gone home. It was just after a storm, and there's nobody there except a few of these people. And I looked around them, and I saw that there's nobody there, so I said to them, "Guess what? There's nobody around. You can hold hands now."
That's great.
And it's good because the majority of cases, believe it or not, the woman just flower, they smile, and the men pull away. The men pull away. And yet, the other day I found a couple, and the man just sort of embraced his wife so much more. And they both smiled. Because there's a tendency to forget, and we need to be grateful for the companion that we're with, because 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, they told each other that they loved each other dearly. And I just interviewed Bruce Lipton last week, and he's got the book, The Honeymoon Effect.
Yes, I love that book.
Yes. I mean, if you were in love before the honeymoon, why cannot you touch this elusive but profound magical feeling of love 20, 30, 40 years, 50 years on?
Well, my wife and I have had some real fun booking into a hotel and mentioning that we're on our honeymoon. And sometimes the person registering us will say, "Oh, well, great. Well, we'll give you a bottle of champagne or something." We say we don't really drink champagne. And she'll say, well, when did you get married? And we'll say, well, 20 years ago. Well, we're still on our honeymoon.
Yes. I'll tell you what, you brightened up their day too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think this is the magic of it, is to be able to share this resonance. We've got to radiate if we can.
You're right. When we're in this stream, like you and I are talking with each other, which is thoroughly delightful, and hopefully the listeners are enjoying this, we get our sense of humor back, and that can be infectious. I was going into a theater with my wife the other day and feeling really high. We were having fun together, and I said to the clerk, one senior and one child. My wife is 59. And the woman laughed and said, okay. And that's what she charged us for. So I think people are just ready. They're poised to have more fun, to experience more meaning, to feel good about their lives, to experience some healing. All it takes is someone showing up with a field that will nurture them and help them do that.
Yeah. The checkout operators and shops, if you go to supermarkets, that's when you can also bring some levity to the situation. They love it.
Well, I don't think we ever can know the impact we have on others just from our casual social interactions. How do we know that the guy who we pay our gas to isn't involved in a deep crisis and all he needs is just a moment from a stranger of showing that he cares about him to heal something and maybe change the course of his life? We never know. I think we have a bigger effect that way than getting on stage and talking to people or something. It's those little interactions day by day that can really affect people's lives.
Well, again, everybody's my brother. Hello, brother. Hi, bro. Can I do anything for you? And I'm now even, which is interesting, as a male, woman, I'll call him sister. I say, hi, sister. Good to see you. And it brings in another level of connection because there's less separation.
Well, and also, you know, we mentioned a few stories earlier about Jesus. He said, what you do to the least of them, you do to me. Right?
So, I didn't know that story.
Yeah, what you do to the least of them, you do to me. So when I look at someone, I think, here's the Christ. What's my attitude? Is it just some kind of belief in spirituality? Or do I really see the divine in everybody that I meet and treat them that way? It's an honor to be in your presence because you represent the divine.
Wow, that's a very high note of being. Is to realize that I am you and you are me and we are one and we are all together.
Cuckoo-ca-choo.
Well, thank you. That was John Lennon, wasn't it?
Yes.
I think Magical Mystery Tour?
Absolutely. I Am the Walrus.
Yes, yeah. Yes, because when he was really informed, Roger Waters of Pink Floyd, strangers meeting in the street by chance, two separate causes meet, and I am you and what I see is me.
Yeah.
Wow, that's profound stuff that comes out.
Really, and breathe. Breathe in the air, remember?
And don't be afraid, afraid to care.
Yeah. Tim, it's so delightful talking with you. Thanks for welcoming me into your studio here in Auckland, and I hope we get a chance to talk again.
Well, we most definitely will make that, because one of the good things with your backup and follow through to your book, Now or Never, is that you will Skype with the people who went to your workshop, so that connection remains.
Yeah.
No matter if we are here in New Zealand in Tomorrowland and you are following about 16 to 17 hours later in the United States, because we are on a planet that has different time zones, we can still be straight through.
Exactly. We need to garden together.
Very true. Yes, because the garden that we've got is the most profoundly majestic and beautiful planet that we have been given. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tim.
That was Will Wilkinson of willtwilkinson.com. willtwilkinson.com. I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 400 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world and become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch.
and or Lisa Eyre.
And Liz Gunn.
In the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say Kia Kaha and Haere Rā. And remember, it's now or never. As we close in on year 2020, we are going to have 2020 eyesight, where we see things in their true colours and clarity. What future do you at heart desire for not only yourself, your family, but all your friends and the greater community on a global scale? It's now or never.